Mini episode 989 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 989. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We have, to say the least, a very outstanding conversation coming up today, one that I have greatly been looking forward to. And again, in the 11th year of doing a show like this, the show where nothing is off topic, we've devoted a decent amount of attention over the years to pro wrestling. We've had a great number of guests from a lot of different walks of life, but this is a truly special conversation today. We've had on a number of this gentleman's contemporaries in the business, whether it be Bret Hart, Harley Race, J.J. Dillon, Jim Cornette, Blanchard, Luger, Koloff, Steele, Joe Laurinaitis, Buddy Landell, Jerry Lawler. We've had a lot of great guests from this industry, but for the butterflies to be churning as they are today, that tells you the guest that we have on and the magnitude of the story that this man has to tell. He's somebody who stands out, I think, very strongly in at least two areas in life. One, of course, would be the life story, and bookended really in a couple of different productions over the years, whether it be Beyond the Mat back in the late 90s to kind of show some of the challenges of the life story, and then the great, heartwarming The Resurrection of Jake the Snake from 2015, a nice bookend, everything that came after working with his good friend Diamond Dallas Page. So again, a great story as far as the life goes, an inspirational thing on the one hand, and on the other hand, this is a guy where when you hear interviews with wrestlers and there's talk about psychology, mind for the business, this is a name that just comes up repeatedly. This is, you probably hear his name more than anybody else's whenever wrestlers are asked about who had a great mind for the business. And pro wrestling is the epitome of the saying that it's an art, not a science, because you have to have a feel for it and you have to be able to build on that and kind of hone those skills. And that's something that he was able to do and route to a great career. I could only be speaking, of course, of the legendary Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake, pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you, sir?
Awesome, man. After that lead-in there, I don't know if I can hold up, but I'll try.
I'm sure you can. I have so many great memories from watching you over the years, and point of personal privilege here to throw in one of my favorite wrestlers and mention it, as I did when we were talking to Tully Blanchard. He said he went through a lot of Ben Gay when he was wrestling this guy. One of my favorites, maybe my favorite from back in the day, Ronnie Garvin in Georgia, and I think 83 and 84.
Oh, yeah.
And watching you tussle with him, and I was a big Ronnie Garvin fan, and I was, as a little kid, I was rooting for him to kill you. But yeah, it was that was some great matches, and I guess you must have come out of those pretty sore, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, Ronnie and I, we just go in there and throw it at each other. We never talked about it. We just went in there and did it. And it was very exciting for me because as a kid growing up, I'd watch Ronnie and scared to death of him, and rightfully so. But I'll tell you a funny one on Ronnie. You know, I used to get him down, I'd be wailing on him pretty good, you know, and wearing his butt out. And I'd be waiting for him to get up and make his comeback. Well, it didn't take me long before I figured it out. There was something that would happen to him right before he's going to start his comeback. And what that something was his nipples would get hard. And once his nipples got hard, he fixed to get up and beat the living hell out of him. And that's the reason I stickered at his breast, I guess. But that's the truth. He'd stomp a mud hole in you in a hurry, man. Ronnie didn't play, man. He knocked the hell out of me, but he didn't mind getting his back, man. So I have no problem with that. I enjoyed every moment in there. And one of the greatest compliments I had was Ronnie speaking out about me and saying wrestling me was like driving a brand new Mercedes. And I thought, well, that's got to be good. So I'll go with that. I really enjoyed it, and I believed in him, and I'd taken over the book in Georgia Championship Wrestling at the time, and fired Buzz Sawyer and Brett Sawyer and Tommy Rich. Well, Tommy just quit. He just walked off. He didn't know what the hell he did at this time anyway, you know, but... Uh-huh. We took Georgia Championship Wrestling, and you know, of course, we made the Legion of Doom.
Right.
And added a few more pieces here and there, and turned King Kong Bundy babyface. So there you go. We did some pretty crazy things, man, but they worked.
You know, those are my earliest memories, Jake, of watching wrestling was when it was on the Superstation. And, of course, me being a kid in Cleveland, Ohio, that's when you guys were starting to make the northern expansion and coming up here and coming to Public Hall. I caught you guys a couple times in, I think, 83 and 84. And that was a wonderful time, Jake.
Yeah, it was great, great times for me. You know, it was my first opportunity to have full control of a territory, and it was all my storylines and everything, and I really, really enjoyed it, and just an amazing time for me in my life. And then, of course, unfortunately, Vince McMahon bought it out and shut it down, so that was that. So, but for a period of time there, man, we were shaking things up, and we had the whole world looking, and that was good.
It really was, and of course... Yeah. That whole thing with Black Saturday, once it got taken over by Vince, and it would end up for the better part of the year under his control, something I'd like to get your thoughts on, because you being really, really, really huge in Mid-South in the 80s, that the talk about if Bill Watts could have kept that contract in 85 if it hadn't gone to Crockett, because apparently it was nip and tuck there, and Crockett came in and got the deal at the last minute. Do you have a sense of how wrestling history might have been different if it was Bill Watts on the Superstation in the late 80s?
It would have went down quicker.
Okay.
Because Bill was such a complete jerk that guys weren't going to put up with his stuff anymore, man. You know, and you know, Bill was very abusive, you know, verbally. You know, he even wanted to rule with an iron thumb and all that stuff, and he liked to intimidate people. But guys weren't putting up with that anymore, man. And, you know, he would have been told to take a hike real quick or somebody to knock him out, you know. And hopefully the second one, you know, but there you go. But, no, he would have sunk it even quicker, man, because he was desperate, you know, and he was going to punish people. You know, I mean, he had an opportunity whenever I came to WCW and had an opportunity to really do something with me there. And what did he do? He took the snake away from me.
Yeah.
Well, he just killed the gimmick. Why in the world are you doing that? You know, and he's done things for the most idiotic reasons. You know, we just want to show him that we're better than they are. Well, you know... This is so stupid, man. I can sit here and make you money, or you can beat me once around, and that's it. You know, and basically that's what happened. You know, he took the snake away, and I went to a rehab, and blah, blah, blah. The rest is history.
Well, by all accounts, interestingly enough, including his own account, Bill Watts is a very difficult man to work for, and he seems to take a lot of pride in interviews in that status. But something I wanted to ask you about, once you moved on from his territory to the one where you had the greatest national acclaim in the WWF in the 80s, to me, and when I was trying to think of examples of your psychology, one of the best things that came to my mind was everybody thinks about your feud with Savage in 91, 92. What I go to... I go to the match in late 86 on Saturday night's main event because the way that everything was so spoon-fed back in the days, good guy in this corner, bad guy in this corner, they send you and Randy Savage out there. You guys both multi-talented as far as your psychology. I mean, Vince never trusted anybody to go out there and not be in a clear-cut, defined role, and they put you guys out there in a sort of experimental thing. That shows the trust in you right there, I think.
Yeah, that, and, you know, it was a spot because Hogan wasn't on that show.
Right.
So it was the first time anybody went out there and was given as much time as we were given to. Now, the bad thing was, is we got Dick Ebersol in the back, and he's telling me and Randy that if you guys don't hold the numbers after you come back from commercials, you'll be back in Poughkeepsie doing local television real quick. You know, and that was the worst thing in the world to tell Randy.
Right.
Because Randy, you're like, oh my God, brother, we got to do something special. No, you don't. What you do is you do what got you there. You know, you don't change that. Randy wanted to change his whole gimmick around and do this other stuff. I'm like, Randy, what are you talking about? And basically the first 5-7 minutes of that match, I just blocked him off, and that's all I did. Blocked him off because he wanted to eat me alive. And I wasn't going to let him do that, you know, because what are you going to do for the next 20 minutes?
Right.
You know, but we made it, man. We, you know, I had some great times with Randy. You know, the thing with Elizabeth and him, and it was awesome. And, you know, that match should have went on to WrestleMania. But Randy hadn't smartened his in-laws up. And whenever I slapped Elizabeth, the in-laws went off on him.
Oh.
And basically told him, don't you ever come back. And we'll shoot your ass if you try to come in this house. And they ran him off. You know, because you said you'd never let a little girl get hurt. Well, she got slapped by a big man, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, man, I see Randy, and he's pulling his hair out, man. He didn't have much left. And, you know, they were gonna split those two up for family watch. You know, no, she's not going back with you. You know, you're not getting another opportunity to hurt her, you know. And he goes, I got to do something right now. I got to beat you. I got to do this to you. I got to do that. I'm like, wait a minute. What the hell? You know? But that's the way it went, man. We had to get out of it in a hurry because, you know, her family were ready to shoot him. I thought it was pretty funny. But unfortunately, it was cut short, and it really was.
That is fascinating. Obviously, I mean, I hadn't heard that before. You know, maybe 2 and 2 is adding up to be 4 here, because I'll tell you what, at another Saturday night's main event, it was the one on Fox, I think, it seemed to come out of the blue. The thing with you and The Undertaker, Undertaker becomes a good guy as he prevents you from hitting her with the chair. So that basically an ad hoc reaction to what you were just describing there, and like, we got to go in another direction, we'll go this way?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I came up with the idea of slamming his hand in the casket and me beating him half to death with that chair. And boy, I did. I wore his butt out. But he couldn't say anything because we filmed both of those things in the same day. Me being behind the curtain, getting ready to hit Randy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Randy hits me with the chair. Well, you know Randy brings it. So
yeah.
Undertaker seen him hit me. And then after, I said, cut us. No, let's do it again. You can lay it in. Come on, man. Don't be hitting me light. It was almost insane, but I knew that I fixed to hear Undertaker about 10 times, and I wanted to show him that I was going to take it as well as give it, you know, because he was a very impressionable age at the time. You know, he came into WWE, and he just killed everybody. I'm riding with him. I'm like, why? He goes, you know all the good strip joints. And he decided he was going to ride with me, and unfortunately, that's not a healthy thing to do. In a matter of about 2 months, I had him in the hospital with alcohol poisoning. So
wow,
that's back when I was a bad boy, man.
Sure.
Thank God I don't do that stuff anymore, man. I'm so happy in my life, you know, and I survived it, and I'm out here helping others now, and it's just the most amazing feeling. I never thought I could come up with something that felt nearly as good as wrestling. Well, there is something, and that is when you reach out and you help somebody that is in dire need of help, struggling with addiction or alcoholism, and you help them and see them stand up, man, that is an incredible rush. And it's something that I'll never get tired of doing, because I don't want anybody to go through what I went through, man. It's, you know, people have the wrong conception of what a good time is, because drug addicts aren't having a good time.
Right.
We're miserable. We're hating life. We're wanting to die. But we can't put it down. And it's so insane, man. And it's a horrible, horrible place to be. And that's the reason we did the movie. I wanted to put it out there for everybody to see. Maybe it could help people that are struggling with being in a house where that person is using, so they can understand them more. You know, because it has nothing to do with, I don't love my kids. I love the hell out of my kids.
Sure.
But that and I just don't want anybody to have to struggle with that, man. I really don't.
Well, as much as I don't like speaking for other people, I'm going to go ahead and speak for all of your fans and say we're very happy you turned it around. And very happy that your life was able to get back on track there. And I want to continue to explore some of the life things with you here. One last question on wrestling, because it kind of pertains to what you were just saying, and that is what I wonder about in terms of the darkness of your character over a period of time. Even when you were a good guy, which is interesting, because you were almost sort of a forerunner of the anti-heroes in the 90s.
Right.
But, you know, how much of the darkness that was in your soul... I mean, obviously, it's hard to look at the bad things that happened to you and find any good in that, but how much of that was necessary for you to be able to tap into to portray what you were portraying?
Well, you know, I've got a real strange thought on that whole thing, and, you know, early in my life, I went through a lot of crap, you know, and being sexually abused and all that stuff. My sister was sexually abused, little girl kidnapped and murdered. All sorts of horrible things happen. And my thought is, when you're put in that position as a child, and you have to think on the run, and you have to learn how to gauge people and read people right away, because, you know, I couldn't walk into the house and be all happy-go-lucky. I couldn't, because I didn't know what was waiting on me on the other side of that door.
Okay.
And I got to read that, what kind of mood she's in, because if I read it wrong, man, I'm in deep doo-doo, you know? No telling what's going to happen. So, bottom line is, you learn why real quick. You know, it's part of survival. Well, you know, with wrestling, you tell interviews, you do interviews and everything, and the interviews have to be so good that people believe. Well, when you've got your, excuse the expression, testicles in a vice, and it's about life and death, or what's going to happen to you in the next hour with some psychotic woman that is beating you, you know, after she makes you perform her sexual crap, and they would beat me afterwards. You have to learn how to read people real quick, and you have to learn how to get yourself in and out of things.
Yeah.
Well, that's basically telling a wrestling story, isn't it? You know, and figure a way in and out of a situation in the ring. Same thing here. And I think me going through the things that I went through helped me with my storytelling ability later on in life as I got into wrestling. I don't ever want anybody to have to go through that.
Right.
Because it was horrible. But I do think that I, you know, that's where I tapped into that at. You know, it was real easy to tap into, man, because it was always there. And, you know, I never finally got over most of that stuff until I was in my 50s. You know, I just could not get away from it, man. It was all constantly in my face. And I finally had to come to terms with it, man. And now I finally, you know, got to a place and found out that instead of keeping it a secret, go out and talk more and more about it. And if you expose it to light, it takes all the power away from it. You know, it's not that dirty secret anymore, the one that can cripple you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you think. As a child, you don't want anybody to learn about it because you don't want to be embarrassed, you're ashamed, you think it's your fault, why am I so bad? And you don't want anybody to know these things because you don't have to talk about that stuff. Are you serious? No. So, there you are, man. You know, you got a lot to deal with, but I found out that if you talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, and it gets pretty easy to talk about, and then once it gets easy to talk about, then you pretty much got it whipped, you know, and that's the hard lesson I had to learn, because I didn't want to talk about it. Are you kidding me? Who wants to talk about that? You know, who wants to talk about, you know, that stuff going on, and the things that happened to my sister, and with my dad, and, you know, all the horrible, ugly things, and, but if you don't do it, you wind up medicating.
Right.
You know, and alcohol and drugs, man. I wanted to black that out. I didn't want to feel that stuff anymore. I didn't want to think about it anymore. And unfortunately, when my sister was kidnapped and murdered, man, you know, they never got a body on her. So for 3 years, I'd be in airports, and I'd see somebody look like her from behind, you know, and I'd go, oh, my God, it's my sister. You know, I'd yell and go running through an airport and scare the hell out of somebody, you know. Because it wasn't her, of course.
Yeah.
I never did find her body, but they know what happened to her. I mean, when your husband's ex-wife kidnaps you, you know, you're pretty much done, you know.
Yeah.
But that's just an ugly part of life, man. I just want to encourage any kids out there listening. When I say kids, you can be 8, you can be 80, you know, depending on what you've been through. If you got something going on, you got to bring it to the light. And you got to reach out and grab as many people as you can and tell it to.
You know?
And, you got to stop those things from happening. And the way you do that is by telling enough people that are in the right position, whether it be the police or a teacher at school or a pastor at church or whatever, but you got to stop it. Because if you don't, you wind up going through hell.
Right.
And hell's not a good place to be.
No. No, it is not. And, you know, it's one of those things, though, you know, we throw it around a lot. It gets to be a cliche to where it loses meaning. But I have to say, I mean, truly, you are doing the Lord's work here and getting it out to people. You are doing so much good letting people know about this and educating them and helping them to work through it. I know at JakeTheSnakeRoberts.com, that's a good hub right there for people to see what you got going on. I know you're getting out and about. You're doing things like I did see the Nerdin' Out Convention, Rochester, Minnesota, September 8th through 9th.
Yep.
But you're getting out there. You're doing some things. What are some of the things that you were doing where you're getting out there and interacting with the people?
Well, I'm doing a thing now with the vets that are coming back, man, and those guys are going through hell, man, and that PTSD is an evil, evil animal, man. Everybody should read about that and see what these guys are going through. I mean, it's horrible what their minds are doing to them, man. And one of my daughters is dating one of the guys, and he's been doing these walks to raise awareness for PTSD, and he walked from Savannah, Georgia to Augusta, Maine.
Wow.
Yeah, 4.5 months. Well, he was getting ready to go from Mexico to Canada. He'll walk that in 5 months. But he was messing around here at the house, and he decided to jump our brick wall fence, and when he came down, he shattered his heel.
Mm.
So he's got to get over that before he goes back out. But you know, Camp Hope is a place in Houston that he went to, and those guys need help, man. And, you know, whatever you can put out there is great. Check out jordan.camp.hope@gmail.com, and check out Jordan, man, and see some wonderful photographs that he's taken on the trails, and find out a little bit about Camp Hope and what they're trying to do for the veterans, man, because, you know, these guys, they put their life on the line, and going over to a foreign country and putting their life on the line, and then they get back here, and we tap them on the butt and say, thanks a lot, see you later. Well, excuse me.
Yeah.
I've got some issues, man. I need some help here, you know? And this is the kind of help that we've got to do it, man, because these guys, man, if they don't, they're going to die. Simple. They're going to die, man. You know, they'll get shot by a policeman because they're going to go off. But, you know, you got to understand what they're going through to understand why they do those things. So we just need to get involved, you know. And I found out something, man, that, you know, you look at what's going on around us, man, and, you know, whether it be the war or the thing with Muslims, some of the Muslims are terrorists, and then you look at what's happening in our schools, kids being shot. We've got to do something. We've got to stand up together, you know, and you can't beat it into people, but you can love it into people.
Right.
You know, that's all I'm saying. Let's quit trying to force somebody to do something, and let's talk through it, and let's work this thing out as a family should, you know, and it's just time, man. It's past time, you know. I don't think disarming the public is the way to go, because if you take the guns away from good people, only the bad people are going to have them.
That's
not
right.
Going to work, folks.
Sure.
You know, I don't want to be like that, but, you know, there's time to get some things done, man. And I think if we as a people will just start banding together and holding hands and walking down the street together, man, white, black, orange, brown, whatever color you are, it doesn't matter, man. It doesn't really matter. Come on, let's think about the real things in life, man.
Right.
The real things in life is family and loving that family and building with that family. And, you know, and then every now and then they'll win a good wrestling match. There you go. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, Jake, there's a real connective thread in what you were saying there towards the end, as far as, again, it is a badly divided society, and it's very, very depressing in those ways. But going back to what the point you'd made before that, as far as whether it be doing stuff for vets with PTSD, which is one of the worthiest causes that there could ever be, that how much better people would feel if they could take the divisive energies and put them into positive ways. I mean, it would solve a lot of problems.
You know, I was telling you earlier about what makes me feel good now, and that's when I help somebody. You know, I'm telling you, it's the most incredible feeling in the world, man, to reach out and help someone that is in dire need, struggling. They might be on their last leg, or maybe they're not. You don't know. But reach out and help somebody, man, with no reward expected. You know, don't help somebody because you think you're going to get laid later. No, don't do that. But if it works for you, go ahead and bring me some too.
Sure.
But, you know, just do it because you love people, man. And, you know, if we just start loving each other back, I think we're all going to be better off.
Exactly. And I have to tell you that just following the story more or less like on a human level, where the last couple of years where I have really felt so good for Diamond Dallas Page was with you being his mentor and him sitting under your learning tree.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what that must have meant to him to be able to reach out and make some kind of an impact. He must have felt like $1 million once things really turned around for you, and he must have gotten that same sense of satisfaction and joy that you're talking about here. So it's a wonderful, positive, tangible example, the kind of thing you're talking about.
Well, you know, he's up with so many people, man. You know, it was this DDP yoga, man. And that stuff is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to admit it, but it is so very good. You know, it kind of pisses me off because I wish the hell I'd known about it sooner.
Sure.
You know, but I didn't. And I probably wouldn't have done it anyway because, I mean, come on, that's yoga, man. That's what she is, you know.
Right.
Well, if you try it, it will kick your butt.
Sure.
And but he's helping a lot of people with that. And I'm so proud of him and so happy for him, man. He deserves a lot for doing what he's done. And, you know, he don't play when it comes to doing the DDP yoga, man. He gets people in there and he works them and he makes them, you know, toe the line and do it right. But he's done a lot of good stuff, man, that he's talking about, you know, whether it be eating real food, which I get that, man. Gluten is a poison. It's all just getting to all of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the government and everything with genetically modified food. Come on, man. What the hell? Just give me some cornbread and some beans, man. I'll be all right, you know.
Right.
But we can't get cornbread and beans anymore because it's not real.
Right.
And what you're doing is you're just putting stuff in there that your body cannot digest, and you wind up getting that beer belly, if you want to call it. It's not beer, it's gluten, man.
Right.
You know, gluten belly. And look at what they're doing, man. We all got to open up our eyes. We really do. And it's almost time for me to get out of here. So,
Jake, thank you so much for being here.
We can do this again. I'd love to do this again.
Yes,
please.
Get
the opportunity. And because I'm going to have a book coming out fairly soon, and we'll definitely come back on and hit the book.
Jake at JakeTheSnakeRoberts.com. I know that's where people can reach you for bookings.
Yeah.
JakeTheSnakeRoberts.com,
yep.
Your website. Thank you so much for your time, Jake. This was every bit the conversation I believe
guys.
It would be. So,
well, let's do it again. Let's have a good time, and God bless everyone, man.
Thank you.
Take
God
care.
Bless you, sir. Have a good one. Thank you for being on. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 989.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.